Greetings, this is Nigeria Anderson, you are UrbanBuzzMag.com, and I have Samar Newsom on the line with me. He has a new EP coming out, but a hot single called I Feel Good. And I tell you, we need songs like that. So, Samar, thank you, and say hello to the people, and let them know what's going on.
Hey everyone, this is Samar Newsom. Thank you for having me, Nigeria.
Yeah, you're welcome. We need a single called I Feel Good. So how did that come about?
So I Feel Good, coming out of the pandemic and actually in the midst of the pandemic, God inspired me to think about the fact that despite what was going on, we had a lot to look forward to and a lot to be thankful for. Just the old scripture of like speaking the things that be not as though they were.
Yeah.
Just really... You know, sometimes we don't feel good. Sometimes we're feeling down, or sometimes we're thinking about the woes of life, and those things are controlling our minds. But the scripture said, whatever things are of good report, whatever things are of pleasant, and if there be any virtue, if there be anything, those pleasant things, those positive things, to think on those things. And so this song is just right in line with that. I believe this is the season where God wants his people to think about the fact that he's keeping them in the midst of anything that they're going through, and that he has a plan where we win at the end. And so thinking about the end and the fact that God has us in his hands, it puts a smile on my face. So that was the inspiration for I Feel Good.
My God, I know. That is good. A friend of mine and I were just talking about, you know what? If you still here after COVID, that's just enough to shout each and every day you open your good eyes. And everybody walking around being angry for no reason. Do you know the hand of God is on your life? Like Noah, some people didn't get on the... Okay,
right.
I felt the spirit coming, but you know, like we made it. We made it.
Absolutely.
You know, so thank you.
Absolutely.
For that release. And you titled the EP Fearless. Now, let's keep it going. Being fearless in this time after surviving the pandemic, we should be fearless. So, you know, tell us a little more about the project.
So the project Fearless, again, during the pandemic, we not only faced the issues of the pandemic from a medical perspective, but also from a socio and economic perspective, and specifically the racism that was shown and the George Floyd and all the other incidents that happened during the pandemic that everybody's eyes were on. And, you know, I believe that God's message for us is to be fearless, because those soldiers had to be fearless in the midst of even their death.
My God.
And, you know, despite that, God is still calling us to be fearless and to fear less, which is really what we're saying, is to fear less and love more.
Oh,
so,
my God.
You know, and it's a message not only to us, but also to the distractors, the detractors, and those who were opposed us. You know what I mean? You talking about the Trump era, where there were so many people just like that hated us. And they showed the hate, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so all of that kind of culminated in that pandemic time. The message of fearless is just, you know, we need to fear less and love more, even on the side of if we're being oppressed. I mean, you know, we still have to understand that Jesus was saying, forgive them for they know not what they do, going to the cross. And, you know, not saying we're Jesus, we're probably incapable of having that level of compassion and love in the midst of that, but God still wants us to. God still expects us to be like him. So, you know, fearless has those notes as well attached to them, just that we need to fear less, love more, on either side of that debate.
Amen. And music is an awesome encouragement. Do you have a song on this project that you favor? And or is there a song you listen to when you need encouragement?
I love them all. I would say these songs to me speak to me. Definitely I Feel Good speaks to me, like almost on a daily basis. There's a song by an artist that's really been speaking to me lately Jason Nelson has a song called Don't Count Me Out. I believe it was recorded also by Marvin Sapp. And that song just speaks so much of just like what God is doing in the midst of whatever trouble you're going through, of whatever doubters you have, whatever people who overlook you. It's just like a song that really encourages you to move forward and to walk into the path that God has for you.
Yeah, that's good. Promoting songs of faith, what's the process like? You know, let's say for a believer who's listening to it and for a non-believer, because I truly believe the diversity of gospel music is really starting to cross over a little more, because we all just need some encouragement. But when we're singing gospel songs, what's the process when, you know, you're telling someone to just trust God, if you understand what I'm saying?
I mean, yeah, I think I do. That process, I mean, it's really first, in any communication, there has to be listening as well as talking. So mm-hmm. like when I'm hearing the concerns of people, or even just kind of seeing them in their state, you know, it's important to kind of listen to where they are and allow God to minister to them through words that he may give you, through songs, through whatever means he deems necessary in that point. But in just promoting the gospel, you know, I've always heard that the best way to promote the gospel is, you know, to live your life and when necessary, use words. I hear that a lot at my church. It's like, you know, live the gospel and when necessary, use words. Meaning like the gospel is more than just the words you say. It's how you conduct your life on a daily basis. And people are watching that gospel more than they're listening to the words that you're saying.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Now, moving forward, in the secular arena, they're having some concerns in regards to AI doing music or representing an artist. But I was having a discussion with a friend of mine, and I was like, AI may take over every genre of music, but I don't believe, maybe you can help me out, I don't believe AI could ever replace some of the fantastic artists who minister through music, through Christian music, gospel music. I really don't care what genre it is, just because it's more spiritual, and I don't think AI can compete with that. What say you?
Well, I think AI is a tool, and just like any aspect of technology, it's what you do with it. Yes, AI will be able to clone probably human beings soon. You know, I'm sure they can do that already. And in terms of music, I've seen representations of like Biggie Smalls rapping Nas lyrics, you know, things that he's never done, but now he's able to do it. But I think the advancement of AI will never take the place of the human connection that not just gospel, but soul music, and just kind of like we've been endowed with the music that really touches people a certain way. Right. And not that other music doesn't. Many genres do. Right. Most genres do, as a matter of fact. But I think those impressions are different in different genres. And so, you know, I think the connection of God and your soul and the spirituality, yes, AI can write lyrics. You know what I mean? I've you know, even toyed with it before. But when it comes down to performance, when it comes down to melody, when it comes down to just capturing people and connecting, I think that you cannot do that absent people. And so, you know, you're going to always have a stronger connection to humans when the connection is coming from a human, when the connection is from a human's experience. And even in AI, you have to put in that target information that resonates from a reference of a human.
Right.
So even though AI exists, it's really still based on human nature. And so, you know, I don't think it's lost to understand that, you know, there's still a need for human interaction. There's still a need for human insertion into that process, because you're not gonna get everything out of AI without putting human into it. So I think we're safe, but I think there are people who are more nervous than they should be, because honestly, a lot of jobs are going away, a lot of vocations are going away, and that's real.
Right.
Those are things that's supposed to happen. So that means that we need to be more innovative. you know?
That's all right. Yeah. So you have a background where you went to Westminster Choir College. I never heard of it, and I didn't know they had a choir college. What do they do there? Like, is it just really a choir college?
So yeah, it's one of the most unique experiences I've had. Especially kind of knowing colleges and knowing other colleges. I did do my first semester at Mason Gross, which is Rutgers School of the Arts. And after being there a semester, because I had gotten into Westminster, my teacher from high school went to Westminster. So I was actually recruited also to Westminster because there was a professor who came to my school in high school and, just told us about Westminster and just kind of like made it visible for us.
Okay.
And even my high school got to visit and do a choral fest at Westminster. So there was a lot of visibility made to kind of just attract students to it. To be honest, it wasn't very diverse, the school.
Mm-hmm.
There were very few Black people there. But I think that's what made the experience unique, and that's what made it an opportunity to learn. So the uniqueness of the actual school, it is a choir college, which means every student is in the choir. So they had about a population of somewhere around 400-something students, including grad students.
Okay.
And they made up the choir. And those choirs performed on the biggest stages, Carnegie Hall, Lincoln Center, NJ Pack, Philadelphia Orchestra, the New York Philharmonic. Like, those were the performances we did as just a normal part of our school experience. So it is a classical conservatory. That was the focus. And, a lot of the professors were opera singers. My professor, my vocal teacher, was an opera singer at the Met. She sang in the choruses at the Met. So, it was a unique experience. Even coming from a Black gospel church background.
Right.
It diversified my palate, so
yes,
I can appreciate the experience. I have friends who sing in opera, all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
And so I appreciate that exposure. It made me a better musician. So
that's good. I heard what you said, but what's something you left with that enhanced your ability to do what you're doing now?
Oh, great question. I had a unique professor. As I said, there was a professor that came and recruited several of us from the inner city schools. And my professor, who is a doctor, Dr. Donald Dumpson, he made sure that we understood the connection between staying connected to sacred music, because there was a choir that he founded there called the Jubilee Singers.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And the Westminster Jubilee Singers were modeled after the traditional Fisk Jubilee Singers, the Morgan State choirs from Black colleges, who back in their day were the fundraisers for the colleges. And so our choir was modeled after that, but in the sense that we could embrace our soulful singing and fuse that singing with classical training. And that was the biggest takeaway I got there, was just fusing classical techniques with my natural ability. And so I know that the presentation that I have is unique because of that.
Mm-hmm.
Because not everybody can say they study classical music, but then also were able to fuse that with just good gospel singing.
Right. And so what on the job training taught you that college didn't?
So on the job training, I've been a teacher for 20 years, and I've been a music minister in churches for over about maybe 30 years or so.
Mm-hmm.
And so all of that training kind of culminates in just really learning important lessons of leadership, of faith, of education in terms of how to deal with people, social interactions. But as well, as a teacher, when you have to teach a lesson, you have to be the first teacher of the lesson and the first learner of the lesson.
That's good.
So there's many lessons that I had to learn, because as a teacher, I had to master it before I could bring it to my students. There's many lessons that over the course of the last few decades that I've learned in that time.
Anything stands out particularly?
I think navigating change.
Okay.
I think that's one of the biggest things. I mean, my pastor preaches about navigating continuity and change. And when you're assessing the viability of your success, whether it's in life, business, you have to know what to change and what to keep the same. And if you change what you should keep the same, you have one outcome. where you lose your identity.
Mm-hmm.
And if you keep the same, what you should change, then you become irrelevant.
I love that.
Those two ideas are some of the important lessons that I've learned. Because you're constantly going to deal with change.
Right.
That's something that no one is immune to. You're going to have change in your life. And so understanding how to navigate it, understanding sometimes when to change, because when change is necessary, not to change becomes detrimental.
Right.
So those are all ideas that I've had the pleasure of, you know, learning over the years and implementing in my life. And, you know, I believe that there's a certain level of success that I've had because of that.
Are you still the music director at Christian Cultural Center?
We have some changes in the leadership at Christian Cultural Center. I'm still a part of the music ministry there, but I'm not the musical director any longer.
Okay.
They're not really guests anymore, but we have several artists that are in residence there.
Mm-hmm.
We have Darwin Hobbs in residence there, and we have Israel Houghton in residence there. And so they are kind of the current leaders setting the tone of what we do musically. So, you know, as they come in, they do things the way they like to do them.
Right.
And so, you know, we've adjusted to their styles.
Okay. Speaking of styles, you have a diverse sound and style of music yourself. And it's such a great mixture of like jazz, R&B. I was listening to Depth of My Soul and I was like, you were way before your time. Like probably when you did it, I think it was like 2007, like people would have been like, blasphemy, right? And so now today, you know, that song, you just need to remaster it and put it back out again because, you know,
it
has so many hits on there. And I was like, yo, oh my goodness. Like, he got to re-release this, you know?
Yeah, that's the plan. It's funny you say that. I reflect sometimes on a moment that I had at a church. And I, you know, in hindsight, I wonder if it was a bit risque. But again, my God knew my heart then. He knows my heart now.
That's right.
And, you know, for whatever reason, I think the pastor was offended by something I said. And in the song, this wasn't one of those songs, but before I put out that album, I put out a mixtape, which basically featured songs with familiar songs. So I did a song by an artist named Common. He has a song where he talks about what if God was a her.
Uh-huh.
So basically, what if God was a woman?
Right.
And so he personified God as a woman, and he talks about all would I treat her the same way and stuff like that. And so I made a song like that because he made a rap like that, so I made a song like that. And again, it got risque. Even the message, I think, was on point. I think people, you know, just heard a couple of the words and just felt like it was disrespectful. And like I said, I understand I didn't knock what they said. I disagreed because obviously I felt like this is what the presentation that God gave me. But like you said, it was a bit early for that style, and I don't think people were ready for it.
Yeah. One of my favorite genres, because I'm an old club girl, is gospel house music, which I'm known for playing.
Mm.
And I was so thankful for B.B. Winans, Ricky Dillard, all of those guys with major names was part of that conglomerate of sound. And of course, it still was early. They were doing that back in the 70s. And so I'm just happy that today we're coming to terms with allowing Christian artists to express themselves. I mean, you know, God is a great God. And if he gave you a sound, we have to respect that. And actually, that's what made me start the radio show, WKPS Radio, because I was like, there's just more artists than Yolanda Adams, Donnie McKirkland, Kirk Franklin, and Hezekiah Walker. Now, I love them all.
Right.
But there's a whole nother host of artists that wasn't getting airplay. And I was like, hey, come over here, guys. Come over here. You know, I'll play you.
Right.
That was just the assignment God gave me. So I love that you said you had a mixtape out there. Sometimes I talk to gospel artists and I always say, you got a mixtape out there running around somewhere before you got, you know, started doing your real thing, your call kicked in, you know. So that's pretty cool. Speaking of diversity, how are you dealing with it now? Because I see you haven't like listening to your albums. You wasn't like, I'm just going to completely change. You continue to promote and produce your sound. So how are you more comfortable mm-hmm. about that now?
I think the way has been made in a lot of ways. In a lot of, how would I say this? Like, there's several advancements that we have had since that first album. So mm-hmm. for one, that was like the beginning of the independent musician and independent artist and independent studio uh-huh. time. Whereas now it's almost like a big studio is almost like it's a far gone conclusion now. There's no real big studios. There's not many of them.
Right.
Where even in the big studios, I know people go to the big studios just for the look, and they're setting up a laptop where they have all their music on a laptop still.
Right.
So, you know, things have changed. You know, things have evolved. My music, I believe God put it in my heart, and I believe in it. There's a song on the album from Depths of My Soul called Miseducation, which still gets a lot of spins and a lot of play in London, and it always has. Like, mm-hmm. and so... And it hasn't stopped. It's been consistent, which,
right.
you know, tells me that there was a message there that someone resonated with. Well, a lot of people resonated
right,
with
right.
in that London area. So shout out to them for definitely showing love. But again, like you said, that music, my plan is to release it now with the flavor of now, you know, that
right.
that I have. But, I mean, I wouldn't change too many things because, like I said, I believed in the music then. I still believe in it. And even with the changing times, there's some things that just doesn't change. God doesn't change.
That's though. Right.
His
That's
messages right. don't change. And, you know, maybe we tweak the expression a little bit, but it's still, I think it still works. And I would love to do a live version of that album. That's
oh, that'll be hot. I think releasing Fearless and then re-releasing Depth of My Soul, you'll be in the runnings, and trust me, we got you over here on WKPS Radio.
Thank you so much.
Now, let me just ask you some fun questions. What's three of your favorite songs, whether it's secular or Christian? What's three of your favorite songs? Three top songs you rock with?
Oh, man. That's a good question because one of my favorite songs is a song called Manifest, and I love the Jonathan Nelson version of it. It's a really cool song. It's an old song. I think it was an old T.D. Jakes album song or something like that, but the song is just so, like, it's one of the songs that resonates with me. What's another song that resonates with me? I mean, there's so many songs. I've always loved Donny Hathaway, A Song for
Come
You.
Come on.
As a keyboardist and singer, you know, I kind of resonate with a lot of his music, just being able to express them playing and singing. So I love that. So I always have. What else? The song I just told you, that's Don't Count Me Out, that's like a song that I kind of keep on repeat right now because just the message is so good for encouraging people. Of course, I play I Feel Good, like I said,
right.
multiple times a day, which it does inspire me to look and feel and change my attitude. So
I love it. About the keyboard, how did you get interested in playing the keys, and do you play any other instrument?
So I started off as a drummer. My mom is an organist. My mom was my first music teacher.
Love it.
And, you know, a lot of things were, they say, the debate of nature versus nurture. But, you know, my mom, I grew up in church under my mom. My mom was the organist, and she took us to church. So when she had choir rehearsal, we went.
You had choir.
when she was playing for Sunday service,
right.
you know, we either, you know, were there or we were playing the drums or something, like some form of involvement. I mean, at some point, my mom called me, oh, I need a tenor tomorrow. Come sing this part.
Oh, I love
it. So, you know, without even trying, just living life, I was involved, you know.
Right.
I didn't try, I wasn't thinking about it. And it wasn't until maybe like seventh grade, eighth grade, when I said, you know what, let me try this a little bit, you know, and I stopped being as nervous. I still was a nervous wreck back then still, but I gave it a try. I sang at my 8th grade graduation, sang the Boyz II Men song, It's So Hard to Say Goodbye to Yesterday.
Uh-huh.
And after that, you know, I was on track to become a singer, basically.
So now, did you dabble in R&B or another genre before gospel, or it was just straight gospel?
I loved R&B. I mean, I still love R&B. And, you know, I mean, it's not what it used to be, but, like, I'm a fan of P.J. Morton. And as we talked about even, like, things changing, like, P.J. Morton is one of the pioneers that, one, made it okay to sing R&B.
Uh-huh.
Being from a gospel background, his father's a preacher, a well-known preacher. But, you know, he's someone who went out there. And as a matter of fact, before he had his personal success, he had albums out. He had albums that kind of like were in that conflict of, like, he had a song called Why Can't We Talk About Love? It's made from up above. It's made from God.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think was the conflict he was dealing with, like, being a preacher's son. But having this desire to express, you know, in a pure way, you know, love. And so
right.
I always loved pure music, you know. I used to sing in a group when I was in high school. Because I went to church and I was kind of in that circle, people would call me like a goody two-shoes kind of guy.
Right.
So I was attracted to, like, Boyz II Men, the clean cut group, where
right.
one of my best friends, he was, like, into Jodeci. He was the black leather jacket and stuff. And I felt like, nah, those guys are the devil. But, you know, like, because they were portraying the bad boy image. And now
right.
I understand better, of course. And I've learned to understand and appreciate how much soul they brought to the music.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
you know, I didn't know how to articulate that prior to, like, really getting into my own thing. But now I can appreciate both and understand the difference and understand what they both bring to the table. And so R&B has always been a heavy influence. I love the singer Joe. I love the singer Brian McKnight, who both have, you know,
right.
Church backgrounds and gospel music backgrounds. Joe was a background singer for Vanessa Bell Armstrong. So all
right.
those runs you see him doing, Vanessa used to do all those runs, you know. And
right.
Brian McKnight, coming from the family of one of the members of Take Six and
right.
Oakwood College, the Seventh-day Adventist school. So all of those are backgrounds in some spiritual connection. And so understanding that even though somebody's singing R&B, it doesn't mean they don't know God.
Right, right.
And, you know, I always actually, when I listen to R&B, even listen to like someone like Mary J. Blige or Faith Evans, who is from where I'm from, Newark, you would hear tributes on all of those. Them, R. Kelly, they all tribute God, which shows some acknowledgement, whether that conflicted sometimes with the music that they put out, you knew that they were still in sync with something that you believed as well. So I always appreciated hearing those interludes on Mary's album or Faith's
yeah,
album or
yeah.
Carl Thomas or 112. You know, that's the era where, you know, of course, being from New York, you know, those are all New York artists.
Of course.
So, you know, that was joy. You know, that gave me joy to say, okay, this is all right to listen to, too, because they're giving God some praise, too.
Yeah, I think every good quality R&B artist has a church background or, you know, some form of choir training because, you know, it just sends that same chill. I mean, the greatest to do it was Aretha Franklin. So
Aretha, Marvin, you know, they straight out of church. And
right.
nobody could really replicate them. Donnie,
right.
Donnie Hathaway. Like, nobody could replicate those sounds.
Right, right. Wow, this was good, and this is what we love to do. That's why we say we are where key players speak. And so I thank you, Samar Newsom, for chopping it up with us. And as we say, once a key player, always a key player. So definitely thank you for allowing us to be one of your media outlets and partners. So as you continue to prosper in your journey, please remember us, and we will definitely connect with you again, especially when you do that re-release of Depth of My Soul. Please holler at your girl again. Tell people how they can get in touch with you.
Absolutely. So, you know, you can, there's a lot of ways to get in touch with me, but I would love to see you on social media. I'm on social media, Samar Newsom, which is SamarNewsome. And you can catch me on Instagram. I have a TikTok. I'm on Facebook, Twitter. You can catch me on all of those same things. Samar Newsom, SamarNewsome.
All right. So thank you again. We'll speak again soon.
All right. Thank you. Thank you so much.